And now, the moment you've all been waiting for. Andy White and Nick Butler talk social media.
I think if we have an intro that's based on people scripting it, they're not going to get it.
So what do you think we should say?
Conversations around social media, technology, two of the brightest social media entrepreneurs in the south of England today.
Yeah, let me write that down.
I think the idea is we've got to go around every cafe in the south of England and record a different episode each one.
What should we call it, though?
It's all about social media. It's Andy White and the Loudmouth Man. Social media white noise.
I like it.
And now... Oh, sod it. Everything they just said.
And we're away.
And then there's that funny moment with the joke.
We're away. And, oh, well, it's a funny day today. Hello, first of all, let's start from the beginning. Hello, welcome to the show. That seagull was very excited as well, just on the roof up there. Welcome to Social Media White Noise. I'm Andy White, aka Dr. Pod.
And I'm Nick Butler, aka Loudmouth Man.
Mm-hmm. Were you going to say anything more about Loudmouth Man? It's not a bit that normally follows.
Loudmouthman.com. There we are. Feeling better now? There we are. It's sorted. It's wrong. It's the wrong day, Andy.
It's the wrong day. Do you know why it's the wrong day? It's a Sunday.
We're recording on a Sunday.
And we've got a special guest with us. He said, sounding very remarkably like John Ketley. A special guest with us. Can our special guest speak?
Our special guest can speak. Ooh. Hello, I'm Jamila, aka Jamila.
Excellent. Our special guest. I didn't think she could actually say anything on our podcast, but she can. I was just going to record her left elbow.
Then
I was going to have a special competition so people could phone in or write on a postcard who they thought the special guest was.
Well, we were going to put her full name details up laser display board.
No, we can't disclose her name, but just send any entries to Jamila Knowles competition, PO Box 46, Brighton BN11UQ.
That's a legitimate address, Andy. Have we actually got a topic to talk about? Or are people listening to us in their show likes right about now thinking, where are they? What's the show number? And what are we talking about today?
The show number is 40. Today we're talking about actors. We're talking about WD-12, not to be confused with WD-40. BPI goes after... Oh, no, we're not, because that was cut from the... No editing in this show. You could talk about it briefly. Do you know what? I'm looking at my cached copy. Thingy Bob, and because we have no access here to internet. Anyway, data.gov, open data, blah blah blah, and call for open data developers, and data validity and data
fidelity
aging
of data and validity, aging of data.
Validity is the word I'm looking for.
So it's the conversation with Andy H2O on Twitter.
Yes, and I haven't been for a run this morning, so I'm not going to be quite.
And yet, you're remarkably quite perky and sprightly. Now, where are we? We are in Destination 100.
We're in a cafe called Destination 100, which is on St James Street in the Kemp Town area of Brighton,
UK. It's fantastic.
We're on the bottom of the boot. Directly down from London, where it bisects the coast, for those of you in the US,
okay,
both of you.
You're now sort of heading into Google latitude levels of specificity there.
Yeah.
We're sitting in the garden on the decking of this cafe in what I can only describe as being that classically hidden Brighton feeling.
Yeah.
You took a photo of this place you put up on YFrog quite a few weeks ago, and I thought, we have to go there!
And
I didn't realise
it was
20 minutes away from where your office is. Yes, I'm appreciative.
12 minutes away from where the office is.
I'm appreciative of the coffee served in trademarked mugs, D100.
Stand by for sexual innuendo coffee description from Nick.
The coffee is damn fine, actually.
Go on, say it, Nick. Like a dark mistress.
Actually, no, it's got the sort of sultry brunette feeling to it. It's definitely got that sort of silky smooth texture of a well blended Arabica. Mm. Unfortunately, it's served in one of these rather overly large cups that both removes the heat from the coffee too quickly.
But not so large that you've had to attach your special large
range
of curved mouth attachment.
I'm still gingerly carrying it in two hands though, and I guess for a lot of cafes, these sort of cup designs encourage that sort of intimacy feeling where you have to embrace it with both hands and bring it to your lips.
But the cup isn't overly large, is it?
Neither is the coffee, which means we're likely to run out of it well before we reach the end of the show, which is crying shame.
Should we talk about the first thing, Nick?
What is the first thing, Andy?
The first thing on our list is ACTA.
ACTA.
Now, do you know what ACTA stands for?
Oh, I thought ACTA was what appeared in a filmer.
Nope. ACTA is an acronym.
See, my
for
joke was almost
remember.
As bad as yours. There
Come on,
more
you know what ACTA
is.
Tell the viewers.
Oh,
both
it's
of them,
something copyright
is.
Trade agreement.
Yeah.
And it's probably the Association of Copyright Trade Agreement, or the Act of Copyright.
Yes.
Anyway, it's the
It's basically
worldwide.
The digital economy bill, but for the world.
It's the worldwide sort of huge, all-encompassing version of the British Digital Economy Bill. And again, it's the classic attempt by large corporations to lobby hard at governments and the European Union governments to encourage the concept of having a shared copyright trade agreement. Because there are all these terrible, terrible countries out there that just don't obey copyright and copy things left, right and centre.
And we're all criminals.
And these huge multi-million dollar companies that are running out of money so fast that they can afford to fly bloggers to LA to cover their E3 conference. Just saying.
You know, why are you laughing, Jamila?
I couldn't possibly say. Maybe it's something about Nick's commentary that amuses me.
Carry on, Nick.
And this is we usually get, you know, heckled by people who don't know what we're doing. It's kind of unusual to have Jamila sitting here taking notes. I feel like I'm going to get to the very end of this and be graded. You know, any minute she's going to slap her book down on the table and I'll have to do an emergency stop in the podcast. And I'll have to quickly go through everything that I observed. So, yes.
It can almost be as good as being thrown out of a coffee shop. Sorry, Nick, say it again because I spoke over you.
Copyright trade agreement.
Now I'm going to cough.
I think this is yet more ludicrous delivery by large corporations in an attempt to create a sort of protectionist attitude around their content because they're running out of money. Because copyright thieves are running out of money. Because do you remember tapes? The taping industry was going to end.
Jamila uses tapes, don't you, Jamila? You're always saying I'm taping.
I'm always saying
even though she's got a digital recorder.
I think it's an idiosyncrasy kind of leftover.
Sorry, hang on.
It's a bit of an idiosyncrasy leftover from when I did use tapes.
Yes, she's showing her age, Nick, because I don't remember tapes. I'm far too young.
I always find it's impolite to talk about a woman's age.
It is. That's why I didn't mention it.
We shall do it on the show anyway.
Okay, right.
Now.
Now, there's a thing called WD-12.
WD-12.
Not WD-40. WD-12. As a tumbleweed blows across the
there is
the
a
platform.
Pain expression that needs to go in there. You've been doing that particular joke all morning,
Should we tell the viewers what WD-12 is? I nearly said 40.
You've been reading into WD-12.
It's this thing that is being signed in the European Parliament. I mean, your bristles are on the microphone, Nick. That's it. He's got a bristly chin. You might want to put it slightly lower down.
Carry on.
It's this thing going through the European Parliament at the moment where people are sort of hang on a minute saying WD-12 is all about saying hang on a minute, we need to sort of make this a bit more sensible, you know, blah blah blah, very sort of rationalising comments, and it's being signed at the moment in the European Parliament, but there are a few countries that haven't signed, including the UK, and you are being encouraged to promote the signing of this document. There is a link in the show notes.
The purpose is to say to the European Union, stop, hold on, you need to consider the unintended consequences. It's just the same thing the Open Rights Group got into in campaigning to the British government and saying, this thing will have unintended consequences. It's a ridiculous policy. We are creating more problems and we're removing legitimacy of new businesses. And we... if I sort of go to a good example here, we have Spotify, which is a European business, a British business, you know, and it's held up as an example of a new media and new industry. But thanks to these sort of copyright agreements, they are unable to get themselves launched into America, so they can't actually go into a wider market because, despite the fact the internet has actually got no geographical boundaries to it at all, everybody acts as if it does, which makes no sense whatsoever. And Spotify being held up from releasing their content into America and therefore growing again. So we have the situation again where we have a British company that's a British software company that could be incredibly successful, but thanks to the machinations of just rolling over and taking it in the British government, my God, I'm really ranty now about this, Spotify being held up from actually growing themselves as a business. We constantly seem to lose the opportunity at growing the British computer economy in Britain because we seem to spend all of our time saying, yes, well, it's all a terrible thing and maybe people shouldn't be doing that and we'll wait to see what the Americans do first. And then we lose the initiative again. But I'm just bitter and twisted from 1982. Shall we go on to that next topic? But people, go and read that link. Go and pay attention to it. Again, join the Open Rights Group. Give £5 a month. Pay attention to what the Open Rights Group are saying because this is not going to go away. And if anything, we need to make people aware that the data is out there for them to own, which is a nice segue almost
into data.gov as Nick takes his berry off and removes the false arm.
Oh, you're
going
to go into the data.gov one.
The...
Okay, I was going to talk about data retention, but data.gov.
Data retention, is that a bit like constipation?
It's a bit like water retention, only, you know, it's not so well talked about and your disks don't end up looking saggy in the drives, but...
Dates work pretty well normally for that, I'm trying.
Open data. So what it is
Will Harris TM.
Is the data retention, the open data governments. Gosh, there's so much good things have come out of this sort of election and this new government coming in, and one of them is to sort of, to a certain extent, downsize the need to have all these statistics departments working on government data.
Mm.
And actually, if we just take all this government data, which is, after all, originally public data.
Now, you told me in oh, God, what did I just do? I spoke too loud as my mic in my ear went really funny.
I think you flicked your finger at me in a very patriarchal way.
I was doing this, it causes it, waving my hand around. But you told me that the data is sitting on more government, that the government is sitting on more data. The Google indexes, could that possibly be?
No,
how could that be true?
I'm
like saying my back garden's bigger than the world.
Let's face it, Google's been around a lot for a lot shorter period of time than say the British government.
Mm-hmm.
The British government collects an awful lot of data. And we're not just, when people think about British government, they immediately think about themselves in relation to the government. And what they don't understand is the government has all this data that isn't just about themselves. It's about the businesses they've dealt with. It's about suppliers and contractors they've worked with. It's about other businesses and, of course, other corporations out there that raise money and raise taxes and pay taxes back in. It's about foreign enterprise and about foreign businesses and foreign trade and so forth. All this data that's being collected. And in the concept of open data, we're looking at the opportunity of saying, here's all this data, and we're going to make it available to public to work with. Now, I touched on this thing last week where I said, in the last show, where I talked about the opportunity to start building businesses out of building data. And at the moment, we've seen how Google have monopolized on people build searches and people make searches. And so Google take what people are looking for and sell that as a value. I see this great opportunity now for businesses to start setting themselves up, contrary to copyright issues and so forth, to set themselves up to say, actually, we will mine the data in a specific, mine the data for specific information that will have a value and then attach that value to people who are looking for it. Because what the British government is doing, all this data is gathered, this data is about what people have done, not what people are looking to do. So it's the past tense of data as opposed to the sort of what we're looking for now, where people are going with it. And the opportunity here is twofold, that consultants can come forward and start sort of becoming the outsourced statisticians and looking for information. But we also get the opportunity to do something which we never got to do before, which is to actually start adding a level of sort of qualification of that data to actually get sort of oversight and get other people to look into how that research was carried out. So if you're a business and if you're sitting back and you're wanting to say start a new business right now, seriously looking at the government data that's available and working out how you're going to mine that, working out how you're going to present that so you can start presenting packets of information to other businesses that's going to be valuable to them. Because we've had all this data available to us and we've never really done anything with it. By having it locked away inside government departments, where it's been a very narrow set of agendas and a very narrow set of remits because they're just generally working on the basis of what they're being asked to do. Now we call that data available and let other people take it away and work out what they're going to do with it.
Are we witnessing a data curation opportunity?
I think we are. And I think what we're going to see is the sort of flip side of this where we're going to stumble. It's going to be a lot of stumblings on this. There's going to be issues over privacy, which aren't actually going to be issues over privacy. There's going to be issues over liberty. There's going to be issues over how that data is being resold. I constantly keep coming back to this, which is we should be able to be at that place now where information about me that's being sold on by a third party, I should have a license to enable whether that's sold on, and I should have a share in the value that that's created. Because every time I go out there and I create information and therefore I create value, people say, why are you complaining about Twitter? Twitter's free. It's not free. You're putting your time in, creating value for it. They're taking all that away, those trending topics. So technically, your cost is your time. So now we're going to have this government data available. People are going to start going into that information. What's going to come out of that in the next 5 to 10 years? We don't know. But I think it's fascinating that here's the first opportunity to go into that data. And again, we could see it completely screwed up by people saying, actually, we now own the copyright, or we now own the trademark, or we now own the patent on investigating government data in this way and presenting it in this fashion. So we've got to pay attention to all those things.
So there is a curation opportunity. I nearly sprang into song then, It's a curation opportunity. And then I thought of, it's a Dalmatian
you
foundation.
You are the very model of a modern system
administrator.
And then
a Dalmatian plantation. And then I was going, Dalmatian, never mind. We're about halfway through the show now. It's 14 odd approximately
it's just
minutes.
It's not the most surreal thing. I think I blame it on a Sunday.
I'm in a very surreal mood. It's a surreal Sunday. Maybe we should call it the Surreal Sunday Show. Should we change the show? Should we thank our sponsors?
How about
Nick?
Sunday morning cereal?
Should we thank our sponsors?
We should do.
Nick, Paul Hadley. Thank our sponsors.
Paul Hadley. AKA
I salute Paul Hadley
for his sponsorship of this show and the provision of coffees and bacon. There's going to be bacon sarnies, isn't there? There should be bacon sarnies.
Well, have you ordered them? I didn't.
I thought you
them.
Ordered them.
No. Were you expecting bacon sarnies?
I was expecting bacon sarnies.
Perhaps Jamila will go and order them. I'm now terribly disappointed
by the lack of bacon sarnies.
Like, you do a big long spiel and I'd disappear off and order them.
Yeah, anyway, but thanks again to Paul Hadley, who's very generous donation, came to us and he just approached and said, here, look, really enjoying the podcast.
Yeah.
Have some money. And anybody else who's listening to this podcast can go to socialmediawhitenoise.com, can click on the donate link. They can now click on the donate link and click on PayPal and set up a PayPal subscription or just pay us directly. And if people are interested, the average cost of a show to us in terms of coffee, bacon sarnies, parking, so forth, is £10.
Nick's cakes,
Andy's cakes, Andy's running cakes. So that's where we are. And we have
a few comics
if you are visiting the website.
And then lunch.
You'll notice we now have a banner up. We have a little discreet banner up.
We do. Are we allowed to say who it is?
Well, eBuyer.
You've said it.
eBuyer, because it's on site, so
okay,
we might as well
eBuyer.
Say who it is.
It's eBuyer.
It's eBuyer. eBuyer.com. They're on Twitter as eBuyer.com.
That's fantastic.
We're just going through the sort of finalisation of doing things like actually, you know, setting up when we're going to start and when we're going to end. This is unusual for us in that it's a sort of official sort of business that wants to say to us, yes, we're interested in sponsoring your show. And I think it's because we've talked about it in the past. They have really good awareness of how to use social media. They understand how to create a communication channel through Twitter that talks about their deals, but also talks about their blog. Through their blog, they talk about their products, what's going on, what people are doing in the office. So they create this community. And you know, they're doing all the things in the right level. They're not spamming people, but they're making people aware. And I have to say, as somebody who's been using eBuyer for years...
Yeah, we used to use them a lot in the early days.
And it's... I mean, you know, I still use them today because I know if I'm... And here's, you know, here's where it comes to sales pitch at the end of the day. I know when I'm buying from eBuyer that I can order it today and I can expect it to turn up next business day.
Mm.
You know, and on that level, sort of in terms of running a business, that's really important. But in terms of my kit's just gone down and I need to resurrect
it.
That's been invaluable to me.
Now, when we were into support in the early days, before we went into podcasting, then we were... I think eBuyer was probably the only supplier that we constantly used throughout that period. Others came and went, but that's the one we constantly used. So that's a right good stuff.
So it's a lot of right good stuff. So I'm really pleased that they've said yes, they're interested in paying for coffees and bacon sarnies, and in return we shall sing their praises, because that after all is what sponsorship's about. We could get really clever and do those really sort of clever skits that they do on Revision 3.
Do they?
Let's talk about that later. We'll talk about it with Google Apps.
Yeah, later. We'll talk about it later.
Yes.
Right, later. Right.
Later.
Call to open data developers the same as data.gov? No, it isn't.
Yes, no, it is. It is. That's the same.
Engage
same
brain,
topic.
Andy.
Engage brain. Skip to the next topic.
Data validity. Now, look, we've got to make this spread out because we're at how many minutes? We're at 17 minutes. Okay. I think we might have peaked too early, Nick.
I don't feel so.
Have we peaked too early?
This is the next point. This is the real coffee. This is the time that everybody needs to take a break, hit the pause button.
Yeah.
And welcome back. Okay, because
you didn't really hit the pause. Did you order a bacon sarnie?
Well, they might have hit the pause.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
if they've hit the pause, how do we know they're not hit the pause right now?
But we could hit the pause.
If they've hit the pause and we're still talking.
We hit the pause.
And anyway, but moving on. Let's get it a bit meta at this point. But speaking of meta, this is what we're at.
It pause.
Yeah, that gets really annoying to people on their own iPod. I can
carry on.
At this point if you like.
Now go on, tell us about it. I was just kidding.
This is probably peaked about this topic too early.
Tell us about data validity.
Andy H2O raised this comment when I said it's 7 a.m. in the morning and do you know where your data is? You know, that classic advert, you know, it's 9 o'clock
at night.
Well,
has it been out? You're a bit concerned it hasn't called home yet or anything.
Exactly, you know, your kids are late out at night, do you know where your kids are? Do you know where your data is? And he said, yes.
Don't have cleared this garden.
I know where the data is. And it's 40 terabytes, but my main question is how much of it is valid? And I said, that's kind of interesting because I think it's the wrong question. And because at the same time, this topic came up.
Warning, Nick is about to speak at three levels above everyone else.
Where Mark Ward talks about a Dutch researcher, Dr. Harald van Heerde. Okay, I could probably get the pronunciation.
That sounds Dutch.
Here. And she's now got...
Van
Heerden. Yeah, yeah, okay. And he's talking about data danger and data privacy and this concept that says, if we just had data that degraded, so that over a period of time, your location data that would be specific to you today might be less specific in a week's time. So instead of saying you were in this cafe, it would say in a week's time that you were in this road, and in a month's time you were in Brighton, and in a year's time you were in the UK. And, you know, this would really benefit privacy. I'm getting sniggered at here, and I have no idea why.
Sorry, carry on. It's nothing to do with you. It's just an internal thing that was going on in my head. So, please carry on, carry on, carry on.
You'll have to then talk about that after the show. So he comes up with this conversation about data aging being of a value to privacy. Andy H2O was talking about valid data in his databases because of, you know, the power-hungry disks that consume energy to store all this data. And I think these are both wrong questions. I think what we actually need to look at is, this is incredibly difficult right now, ladies and gentlemen, as Andy sniggers away into his coffee. I think it's the wrong question.
Ignore me.
Because what we're looking at here is people being concerned about data validity. Well, I don't think data ever goes out of date. I don't think the age of data, I mean, if we look at government records, even the Hansard archives, which are the archives of all the conversations that go on in British government, they go back years. I don't think data ages in that term anymore, because once you put something down digitally, I know I've got files from emails that are from like 2001, so these go back a really long time. There's no concept of aging in data anymore. And I don't think we need to be worrying about storage, because in the same space that I used to store a 20 gig disk drive that used to draw, you know, 5.5 volts off of the power supply adapter, I'm now storing a 2 terabyte disk drive, or a 1 terabyte disk drive, that takes 5.5 volts off of the power adapter. So for the same storage requirements in terms of space, and for the same utilization of data, I'm ending up with far more data in that space. So I don't think these two things are actually what's relevant, but I think we need to take, and this is where we begin to sort of go off the beaten track of this makes sense. We need to look at what DRM is doing with data. And what DRM is trying to focus on data, and it's saying, we're going to lock down that you can play this file because you have ownership of it. I think we should flip it the other way around. I think we should be looking at DRM in terms of locating data. Because the number one problem that we have, if you're a system admin, the number one problem you have is you build a file server for everybody in the office, and on that file, there's that PowerPoint slide that the marketing department want to work with. And that PowerPoint slide is probably about 100 meg big, and it's on the file server for them to access from the file server from their desktops. So what do? They work on it, and they go, oh, I need everybody in the team to have a look at this. So they then attach it to an email, and they send that one file to their 8 colleagues to have a look at. Who then give their responses back and send it back. So a 100 meg file is just basically just taking up 1 gigabyte.
That was a very elitist figure from me then, sorry about that.
So what's happened is you have this one file. Now that's the original file, that's the one you're interested in. From Randy's point of view, that's the valid file. And then we have these 8 copies of the file that are redundant because they're in everybody's inbox and they've been seen. And then we have the 3 copies that have been sent back to the person with the changes on it. So what we actually have is a problem not of data storage, because we can have an infinite amount of space available. Because we're never really going to run out of data storage space in the same way that we're never actually going to run out of bandwidth space. These things are constantly sort of increasing beyond the scope of our ability to fill them. We're not going to run out of power to support all this storage, because actually the amount of power required per megabyte is constantly requiring less and less and less and less and less. You know, we've gone from 20 gigabytes to 2 terabytes, and it's the same 12 volt, you know, adapter that's plugged into the back of it. So that's not the problem. But what we do have is not a question of validity in terms of what's the correct version of this PowerPoint slide, but a question of location, which is, where else has this PowerPoint slide been stored? How many other places have we stored this file?
Yeah.
And in doing that, if we can begin to curate that data in terms of identifying its lifestyle in terms of data, not in terms of where it's, not in terms of how old it is or what it is, but where it's located, then you're actually able to track that path back to say, here's the original file, here's the edited file, here's the most recent file, these are the ones that we can keep, and all the rest of these are basically the footprints of where that data's gone to. And I think we could do something interesting with DRM on that level.
Tell me about this DRM idea, because you mentioned this before we started recording, actually, and it piqued my interest.
Well, because we're moving away from owning data. We are actually moving into this concept of renting data on a regular basis. You know, we can rent a film to download. So instead of me having a, I mean, I now no longer buy DVDs and Blu-rays. I will basically stream movies to me via my Xbox, via my PlayStation, or I'll get it off of Sky Anywhere, and I'm basically taking it over the internet, and I'm taking that data down to me. Mm. We're moving by having a Spotify membership. We're moving away from having, you know, your own curated big library of music that defines who you are. Into, I have a Spotify membership and here are all my playlists. And that begins to define who you are as somebody who listens to a type of music. But what we're actually doing is we're moving away from owning that MP3 file or owning that AVI video file into we own the rights to access it at a particular time that we want to access it. And the corporation that are managing it have got that copy up on their servers. So there's no longer a need for me to have my MP3, you to have your MP3, Jamila to have her MP3. We just have access to listen to that music when we want to. Mm. And so there isn't suddenly that worry about how much data we're creating, because we're not having three copies of that file on three different devices all the time. Now, this assumes, yes, I can hear a few people screaming into their iPods right now.
Both of our
this
listeners.
Assumes that you will have internet access. This assumes you'll have internet speeds. This assumes that DRM certificates won't expire. Yes, it assumes all of these things. But these things aren't hard to deliver on. In a 3G modern non-restricted world, unless of course Obama gets his kill switch, which is a whole other topic.
God, I've heard of that one.
So, you know, the net result is that if the net is up and available, then all of these things are available to you. The need for having storage space locally is irrelevant. The need to archive data in terms of I've got to delete files because I'm running out of space is irrelevant.
Yeah.
And I think we're moving into where is my file located, which goes back to it's 4 p.m. in the morning. Do you know where your data is?
Well, at 25 minutes and 40 seconds into the show,
at the end of
can
my
I
coffee.
Propose? Can I propose? You spoke about both of our listeners shouting at their iPods that. Sorry, I'm working at a very slow pace. Speed up a bit. Shouting into their iPods that what if you don't have an internet connection? And we. On the way to this recording today, we talked about a Moore's Law for the importance of the internet. What do you think of that? A Moore's Law. So every X month, the internet
the
doubles
internet
in importance.
Importance. Yes,
doubles.
You're right. It's importance. Well, you look at if you're looking at all network. I mean, think about human beings is we build networks and we build communication. It's what we do all the time. We build different ways to make communication easy. You know, we build roads to get towns easier, it makes commerce easier. You know, we build...
Sorry for the wind, folks. Hang on a second. Let the wind die down.
Carry on. We build languages, we build letters, and we build communication systems, we build libraries. And we constantly build different ways to speed up communication. You know, we built telephone lines and telegraph poles, and then we started broadcasting things through radio waves, and then we started sending data through optical systems. And what we're actually looking at is we're constantly increasing the way in which we can communicate at high speed, and we're making that almost ubiquitous. I mean, we're all sitting around here with iPods out and MacBooks out and you know USB dongles to connect
tapes.
To the internet and mobile phones and so forth, and that is
wax cylinders.
Exponentially increasing. The downside to all this exponential increase is governments will come along and say, well, it's important that we regulate it. You know, well, we regulated telephone systems and we regulated telegraph systems and we, you know, we regulated broadcast TV. We need to regulate the internet. And actually, when you look at that regulation, that slowed down that speed up of creativity, that slowed down that innovation, that actually reduced the opportunity to create new stuff because things began to be exactly the same as they were before. The design might change, but the effective utilization of that has been the same. I put out this idea, and apparently there's a company working on it, that the next big mobile company will only ever offer data. The next smart mobile company to come along won't bother offering voice. They'll just offer data. They'll base their whole package on data alone because they'll know that you're using Skype, you're using voice over IP, you're using a mobile device, and you're not using a mobile phone, you're using a mobile device that's just connected ubiquitously to the internet. And that through, you know, voice over IP, SIP, Skype, etc., that's your always-on connection.
I wonder how many businesses have been sparked by people listening to this podcast, Nick, and your ideas.
I tell you what, I do a little Google alert for the topics that we talk about.
Do you?
And what happens is quite a few blogs suddenly turn up with exactly the same topics that we've linked to and discussed. And these are blogs around the sort of Twitter community that we know. So I kind of get the feeling a few people talk about various bits and pieces and we take those ideas away. I know that this mobile data idea is out there. And I'm going to keep tabs on that Twitter user and see what comes of it.
Okay.
But I think it's going to be the way forward, definitely.
It's a subject I wanted to talk about because I think it's just a very interesting idea. We'll have to leave it there, I think, at 29 minutes into the show. Sorry about the tittering earlier. What happened was, every time Nick said a word that ended in shun, I just thought of Dalmatian Plantation and I just couldn't get out of my head. It was just absolutely bizarre, but that's the way my brain works.
We are never doing a show on a Sunday morning again.
I was just hoping and praying you wouldn't say any words that ended in shun. Sorry. Okay, so I've been Andy White, aka Dr. Pod, and I probably still will be in 2 weeks' time, and he's been...
I have been Nick Butler, aka Loudmouth Man of loudmouthman.com. Please visit the website, socialmediawhitenoise.com. Leave a comment. I have fixed the comments now, so it's no longer required to leave a PayPal donation to provide a comment, although that is also appreciated.
What? And it's goodbye from Jamila.
Goodbye from me.
Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye, goodbye. He presses the button, goodbye.
Bye,
he
goodbye.
Moves the mouse.
Thanks for listening to Social Media White Noise, brought to you by Andy White, aka Dr. Pod, and Nick Butler, aka Loudmouth Man. Please visit www.socialmediawhitenoise.com, where you can leave comments, listen to the show straight from the webpage, and subscribe for free. Email us at ulot@socialmediawhitenoise.com. Follow us on Twitter, Dr. Pod, and Loudmouth Man. We'd like to thank the coffee shops of Sussex, social media and technology, without whom this show would not be possible. See you soon. Peace.